Beanball Podcast, Episode 7. I am your host, Jason Wojciechowski, coming to you from Beanball Studios in Los Angeles. Tonight, the guest in Beanball Studios, my neighbors, out the window, over sort of across a tiny little yard and into the next door, where they appear to be having a party that involves a drum circle. So you're just going to have to bear with me. Any of my fellow Hampshire College alumni will reminisce and think back fondly on their times with the drum circles on the quad. I will not reminisce quite so fondly. But tonight, I will reminisce about what happened about, 2 hours ago, which is that the A's finished off a 10-2 win over the Padres, their fourth win in a row. I'm pretty sure the A's should be petitioning for a move to the National League West right about now. It started off with 5 runs in the first inning, and it just, it didn't quite snowball from there because they only scored 5, but they scored 5 more for the rest of the game. But it was never really close after the 5 in the first inning. Brandon Moss, he hit another home run, so he's up to 12 or something in his first 7 games with the A's. I think he's got 5, which is a lot of home runs. I think Kealakai, who he had 2 or 3 maybe in his time with the A's. I don't think Derek Barton hit one. I don't think Brandon Allen hit one. So in the course of about a week, he's already at least doubled the A's production at first base, home run production at first base. He's also hitting doubles. And obviously, when the A's score 10 runs, it's not just Brandon Moss, the entire offense. Although the offense, you look at the box score, and it's not crazy. It's not, everybody's got 2 hits or anything like that. Some people jump out. Cliff Pennington, 3 for 3 with a walk, including a double that he just smashed off the wall in left center, which was a very nice double. Colin Cowgill had a couple of hits, although he also got picked off on a third to first, that stupid third to first move that pitchers make. That was terrible. I don't know how. You rarely see a major league player picked off that way, but he did. Now, the fortunate aspect of this is that the pitcher, and I don't remember which Padres pitcher it was at this point. I don't remember if it was the starter or if it was Brad Boxberger, the reliever, but he just threw the ball into center field trying to get Cowgill at second, which allowed the runner at third to score, and Cowgill to get to third without a real play, which it was kind of a, we'll call this a Ricky run, in a certain sense. Let's say that Cowgill put the pressure on him to make the bad throw, and we'll give him the credit for that. Base running, Coco Crisp actually stole another base. He had 2 hits. He's batting leadoff again. Jamal Weeks struggling a little bit, and Crisp isn't hitting either, but my guess is that Bob Melvin swapped them in order to get Weeks into the second spot and maybe have that leadoff pressure off of him. You sort of feel like as a leadoff man, you have to take pitches, you have to see pitches. Maybe in the second spot, you just do your thing and you just hit. So Crisp batting leadoff did end up stealing a base, and I don't remember exactly when the last time he's been caught was. I think it's 33 straight steals now, which I think does go back to around the time that Dave Henderson was playing center field for the A's. I think it's been about that long since Coco. Wow, that is the worst error. I'm sorry, Ricky. I did not mean to compare you to Coco Crisp. The pitching, Travis Blackley started the game for the A's, kind of unremarkable as Travis Blackley is. He just sort of throws his fastball up there and, 90 or 91 or something, and just tries to get weak balls in play, and that's more or less what he did, because this is the Padres, and really all they're capable of is weak balls in play. Carlos Quentin hit a ball hard at one point, but Carlos Quentin's really the only guy in the lineup. Maybe Yonder Alonso someday could be a threat, but he hasn't really hit this year all that well. So you've got Quentin and you've got Alonso, and then you got Everett Cabrera, and you've got and Will Venable wasn't in the lineup, and Venable's been good, so he wasn't starting, so you didn't have to worry about him. This is not an imposing Padres lineup, and so you had Blackley and Evan Scribner, who are, you know, if you're not an A's fan, you haven't heard of these guys, but, you know, 2 runs in 9 innings, so that worked out pretty well. Scribner, I'd seen him once before. I don't remember if I'm just not remembering other games that he pitched or what the story is, but, you know, this is the first time I was really paying attention to him pitching. His fastball looks a little straight to me in terms of sink, but it does seem to have some good arm side run. I haven't checked the pitch effects on that, but it seems like it works into right-handers pretty well, and he's got this ridiculous curveball that's probably about 18 to 20 miles an hour slower than the fastball. I call it 15 to 18 miles an hour slower than the fastball. And, you know, it's this big breaking curve, but he can actually drop it in for strikes, and that's a pitch that's really hard to hit. Even one that's located not perfectly, you know, hanging's a little different where it kind of loops. As long as it's fairly sharp, even if it's not in a perfect location, it's a hard pitch to adjust to when it's that slow after a 90 mile an hour fastball. And when it breaks that much, even if you sort of get the barrel on the ball, the plane of the ball is just so different from a fastball that I think it can be a pretty effective pitch, especially for a one-inning reliever. Through 3 innings in this one. But a one-inning reliever, you know, who you only see the curve 3 or 4 times over the course of that inning, maybe a little more if it's really working and he throws it more, but no batter you're not going to get to see this pitcher 3 times over the course of a game and really get used to the curveball. So he could maybe be an effective reliever, is Evan Scribner. I mentioned that he threw 3 innings, so let's rant about the 3-inning save rule, because guess what? Evan Scribner got a save in a 10-2 game. This is absurd. Why on earth does this rule even exist? That's not a save. It's just he came in when the game was, I think, 8-2 or 7-2 or something like that, and he ends up with a save. How do you get a save in a game in which you cannot get a blown save? It's bad enough that setup men can get blown saves even though they're never going to get a save, because theoretically they could get a save. Setup man who comes in with a 1-run lead in the 8th inning, everybody knows he's not going to pitch the 9th, but theoretically he could pitch the 9th, and so if he gives up that run, it kind of makes sense in a certain way to give him a blown save, although it doesn't make sense to do any analysis based on that blown save to count that as part of his save percentage if you want to see how good a closer he is. But to give a guy a save when he could never get a blown save, I mean, that's like having 0 in the denominator and 1 in the numerator. Like, he's got 1 save but no save opportunities, because how do you count it as a save opportunity if he couldn't get a blown save? So I am considering Evan Scribner's career save percentage right now to be infinity, or to be undefined, or to be something. It's not infinity, and I'm sorry to my math professors for saying that. It is undefined. 1 divided by 0 is undefined. And so that is Evan Scribner's save percentage, and I will hear no more of this. Off the field, Scott Hatterberg making his not quite his debut in the booth. He'd been there as a guest at least once, I think, even this year during the sort of Moneyball stuff. But he is now, you know, they're looking at potentially grooming him, I guess, to be Ray Fosse's replacement. So he was up there with Glenn by himself, and he did okay. I mean, he's obviously a sharp guy. He seems funny. He seems, you know, like he's pretty on the ball, but he didn't really say anything interesting in the game. His insights were not really insights. At one time, he kind of talked about one of the Padres pitchers' arm slots, and Glenn sort of prompted him to talk about what he meant by arm slot, and he kind of explained how pitchers have a window of arm slots. They don't have necessarily one particular spot at which they release the ball. So that was interesting. And then, you know, ideally, if Hatterberg were this kind of guy, he could bring in data on this, you know, later on. This could be one of his things that he talks about. Where do pitchers release the ball? And some pitchers are more consistent where they release the ball. And what does that do to a batter? And, you know, you can talk about these kinds of things. And unfortunately, he didn't do that. So, but this is his first game. It's hard to tell how he's going to be in general. He seemed a little nervous, frankly. Not nervous like, oh, he's scared to talk on TV. But I think he just wasn't comfortable necessarily with where he fit with Glenn in the flow of the game, and where he should have jumped in, and where he should stop talking, and things like that. He didn't over-talk. And I think he erred on the side of not talking and not taking up space, which is probably good. I mean, I think this is one of the benefits of Ray and Glenn, is that they do stay out of the way of the game. They would rather talk less than talk more. They exercise caution on that front. The thing about Hatteberg so far is that if he's not going to have this extra analysis, then he's got, you know, Ray, he's not real strong on analysis. He doesn't like the advanced stats. He doesn't bring that kind of thing in, but where he makes up for it is in personality. You know, he loves talking about the dibs and the other ballpark food, and, you know, when they sat up in the upper deck, he actually talked about how he's afraid of heights. Audio footnote, this might have actually been Glenn. I completely might have misspoken. I don't know if that was Ray who talked about being afraid of heights. It probably was Glenn. But I think the point stands about Ray's personality. You know, that was one of the great things. And everybody loves Ray Fossey's personality. He's a funny guy. You know, every once in a while he'll rant about the umpires, he'll rant about how it's a terrible call, and he sounds like Charles Barkley a little bit. So if Hatteberg isn't going to distinguish himself on the analysis, he's going to have to be sort of engaging and funny and have a strong personality the way that Ray Fossey does. And it's too early to tell. Hopefully he'll grow into this, if this is going to be the thing that he does. If it's not, then I'm perfectly happy to have Ray Fossey back for the next 10 years, and we'll figure out a replacement when we get there. Also in the booth was Addison Russell making an appearance. He signed with the A's today. Addison Russell, the A's first-round draft pick, he signed today. So he showed up for about a half inning, and he talked. And, you know, he's an 18-year-old kid on national television. He wasn't super comfortable up there, but it was pretty adorable the way he called Ray and Scott Hatteberg. I'm sorry, Glenn and Scott Hatteberg, sir, after every question. You know, Ray, Glenn has asked him if he's flying. You know, you're flying to Phoenix after you leave here, he's like, sir, yes, that's right, that's where I'm going, and he describes his whole flight pattern, you know, his flight schedule, without describing what they were getting at, which is, where is he going to play baseball this season? So that was kind of amusing. He seemed a little, you know, on edge, obviously. I mean, like I said, he's an 18-year-old kid, he's graduated high school, and he's now suddenly on national television, not national television, local television, but still with, you know, six-figure people at least watching him, maybe a million, who knows? So that was kind of neat, and they showed some video of him taking batting practice, and they didn't show any video of him fielding, which was unfortunate, but they did show him hitting, and, you know, it was like three pitches, and you're not going to scout based on batting practice anyway. So that was the game, that was the broadcast, and I am well over time this time, so let's just get to the closing material real quick. Tomorrow, Saturday, or today, as you're listening to this, Baseball Prospectus Day at the ballpark at the Angel Stadium in Anaheim. Sam Miller's going to be there, and a bunch of other people are going to be there. Stephanie B is going to be there, and I am going to be there. I am making an appearance. If you are in Southern California and you didn't buy tickets, but you could still get down to the game, do it, and just drop by. I don't remember where we're going to be sitting, but, you know, get in touch and you can find out where we're sitting, and you just drop by and say hello. I've never met any of you, so that would be fun. And if you're going to be there and you haven't said anything, well, I'll meet you there. Also, the A's released Manny Ramirez today. I'm not going to talk about that on the podcast because I did do a piece on the blog about it, so check that out. That's also up. And that's it. That's it for Beanball Podcast Episode 7. I have been, as always, Jason Wojciechowski from Beanball Studios in Los Angeles. If you want to have me talk about things that you want to talk about on the podcast, email me, jasonw@beanball.org. Tweet at me, JLWoj on Twitter, facebook.com/beanball. Subscribe to the Beanball Podcast feed. Leave a comment on the blog. Anyway, there are like 18,000 ways to get in touch with me. So if you want me to cover something that I am not otherwise covering, you just let me know, and I will do that for you. And I will talk to you all again soon.